Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Good evening, good morning, or good afternoon. This is More Than Just a Podcast.
Reluctant podcast.
Now, is it season 10 or is it season 11? I never know when the swap over is.
Yeah, because this is the fag end. I think when they announce the fixtures, that's when it goes to 11.
Okay, I'll take your lead on that. we are back. The Booches are on their holidays. They might come back.
They're always on their holidays.
I know.
I mean, all the time you say, oh, George is looking after baby. I mean, can you not speak into a microphone while you've got a baby in your hands or something?
Yeah, I know. I know. And it's his podcast, remember? Ian?
Yeah, I know. Dereliction of duty.
Nigel on his sabbatical. We don't know what that means at the moment, but it means...
It means he's pissed off with you and doesn't want to do the podcast. That's what it means.
Yeah, he's pissed off with me as well because he's not doing his column during the summer
he's
either.
He's pissed off with a lot of you.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
He don't mind talking to me.
but as the saying goes, when the cat's away, the mice do play. So there's no two-hour podcast tonight. Ian's got his dinner. I've got a hot tub party in hours' time. So, well, it's been a nice hot day.
That sounds a bit perverted.
Well, you know, a bit of champagne and strawberries.
is this a naked podcast? A naked hot tub?
It's not a naked podcast.
And definitely not. Thankfully,
I will.
Not
be
now.
Having...
We've got the cameras. It's not.
No. Isn't it funny when you see people, because Len, you and I haven't met before.
No.
And you don't look a bit like I thought you would from your
voice. There you go. That's the idea, to be honest, Ian.
Yeah. We could see each other doing this podcast today, but just to be clear, we're not broadcasting the video. So, Jay's anonymity will remain.
Yeah, other than the fact you just said me fucking name.
other than I just said your name. But hey, it's not that much of a secret. Sorry, Len. Anyway, it is a football podcast. We're going to talk about some football. Although, there's not really a lot of football to talk about because, you know, we've already done the end of season review. Nothing's really happening in the transfer market. You know, we're still finding 20 stories a day on Clarent Hugh, obviously, because, you know.
Yeah, because you're greedy.
But, you know, it's a normal, silly season. You know, he's got 85 million, what he wants to spend. He's about to sign a three-year deal, two-year. This is David Moyes, a two-year with a one-year extension. He's about to go on his holidays to Scotland. We've had the pre-season fixtures announced, six hammers away for their Euros. I mean, what more do you want? Agent Suchek has been tapping up Alex Crow. Is it Crow?
I don't know. I don't get involved, really.
No.
I don't do the transfer tittle-tattle.
Well, what is, are we going to talk about for the next hour, really then? There's nothing else to talk about.
Is there any West Ham news that you want to ask me about or we want to talk about before we get to the main event?
What the hell was that article on Clarion Hill about David Moyes, that poll?
That was a good poll. Yeah. Now, let me tell you, right? There's a method in our madness, right? We do like a poll, Clarion Hill. And the poll was David Moyes.
Robert Lewandowski.
Is he the right long-term manager for West Ham? Now, we did expect to say
Sean,
yes.
What is the point of a poll like that?
Yeah, that's what I want to know.
Let me tell you. The point of the poll like that is a noisy minority, i.e. people like Baz Cox, who shout long and hard that Moyes is not a great manager and we need a better manager, etc. But a poll like this shows, apart from it being a slow news day because it's a bank holiday, shows that he's very much in the minority. In fact, 2% of people.
We didn't need a poll to work that out.
Well, there you go. There you go. You didn't have to fill it in. Why are we talking about it?
Well, we've covered it. You can move on.
David
Moore,
by the way, just for clarity, because I've had quite a few prominent people ask me today, did David Sullivan ask you to run that poll? No, he did not. No,
If he had, you wouldn't have said so.
He didn't know.
Sorry, I feel as if I have to step in Nigel's shoes at this
point. Oh, well, here we go.
You do that, Ian.
So the cat's away and mice play, and I thought I was going to have a complete freedom to do anything I want.
No.
Well, he's got a substitute in Ian. Are you going to suddenly be all GSB out and...
What you have to remember, Sean, is that normally at this time of the evening, I'm on the radio holding people to account. And I feel that that's Nigel's role in this podcast, holding you to account.
Yeah.
So I feel it's only fair that I do a bit of that tonight.
Busman's
holiday.
All right. Okay. Fair enough. Well, we're going to turn the tables on you because we're going to ask you some questions tonight, Ian.
Are you? Okay.
You've heard of a propaganda, yeah?
By the way, you've been a shit host tonight, Sean, because you haven't actually introduced Len and me.
Yeah,
that is true. That is true.
There may be some people out there who've never heard of either Len.
All right, they're going to know a bit more about you in a minute.
And while we're at it, you don't have the rights to say this is a propaganda. Hang on.
Let me finish. I didn't finish, Len. Right, let me finish. First of all, good evening, Len. Where are you and what are you doing?
Don't you worry about that. I mean, you can see where I am for a start. I'm in the lounge doing a podcast with you.
Okay. And secondly, Ian, where are you, a.k.a. the Shed Man 2? Where are you? What are you doing?
I'm in my shed.
Really?
Are you really?
No. I'm in my sitting room in my house in Lammas, which is a village about 9 miles north of Norwich.
Nice.
It looks very nice, Ian.
You can't see any of it. All you can see is my window.
That's what looks nice about it. I ain't got a window.
I can see someone outside.
In your cell.
I can see someone outside the window with crab nets.
I beg your pardon?
Are they crab nets?
No, they're not crab nets.
No.
Long time since I've had crabs.
Anyway, sorry. Apologies for not introducing you. Ian, so as Len said, I'm not allowed to do propaganda for legal reasons. Apparently
plus,
the name is
plus
is
the
copyrighted
fact if you
by
use propaganda, not. I'm allowed to ask the listeners some questions. That was the
agreed.
Deal,
so I'm not going to do a propaganda. I'm going to do a proper butcher's hook.
Ah, all right.
Butcher's hook, Ian.
Yeah.
Ian, you asked Nigel some questions on your podcast. Yep. You're one of 15 podcasts. So we wanted tonight for the listeners to have a butcher's hook at you and find out what makes you West Ham. We're going to do this. This is going to be the first of many. We're going to ask each of our 8 listeners, maybe there's even more, what makes them West Ham over the summer. So I do know some of this, but play along, Ian.
Okay.
So I'm not going to ask you if you're an in-towner or out-of-towner. That's what they do on propaganda.
He's an out-of-towner.
First of all,
let's
start off. Born in Canning Town, yeah, Ian?
Born in Cambridge.
Cambridge.
Yeah.
So how does Dad was a West Ham fan then?
Dad was a Blackpool fan.
Dad was a
Mum
Blackpool
was a West Ham fan.
Mum became a West Ham fan because I supported West Ham. Dad was a Blackpool fan because in the 1940s, I mean, he was born in 1929. So in the 1940s, Blackpool were the Manchester United of their day.
Yeah.
And he went to the 1948 Cup final, I think. And I remember in 1974, when I would have been 11, he took me to Wembley for the first time. And I think that was the first time he'd been back since 1948. We saw England play Argentina. It was a 2-2 draw. Mario Kempes scored twice. I think Mick Shannon and Frank Worthington scored for us. And I mean, for an 11-year-old kid going to Wembley for the first time, it was just an amazing experience. There was a whole busload of us went from my village, because I lived in a little village called Ashton, which is near Saffron Walden, sort of the posh bit of Essex.
Yeah.
And I went to the local village
school.
Is there
a posh part of Essex?
There really is.
It does have to be like that.
Yeah.
Not sure.
And this is actually how I first met Nigel, when he had a real go at me because I admitted that as a 10-year-old, I supported Manchester United, as did a lot of people in Essex in those days. But then they got relegated. And I don't know, I always say that it's the shame of supporting Manchester United.
Man United.
I always say it's the shame of supporting a relegated team that made me switch. But I'm not sure, I think that may be a false memory. Because I remember going to see West Ham play Cambridge United in a testimonial, and I think this was in 1972, and that was before Manchester United got relegated. So yeah. I wonder whether I've got false memory syndrome over this. I don't know. But my best friend at the time, Roger Sizer, he supported West Ham. His dad was a printer in the East End, and he commuted into London every day. And I was very easily led as a child, still am to a certain extent. And so I then started supporting West Ham and have never looked back since. I mean, how I don't regret not supporting Manchester United anymore.
What was his name, your best friend?
Roger Sizer.
Are you still in touch with him? Is he still a West Ham fan?
I see him. Yeah, no, absolutely. I see him from time to time. Because where I grew up, actually, most of my friends at primary school were generally Chelsea or Tottenham supporters. I don't remember anybody apart from Roger who was a West Ham supporter, so maybe I felt sorry for him and he needed someone to help him out. I don't know. And then my first game was at Upton Park in March 1975, and it was against Chelsea. And my uncle lived in Epping at the time. He managed the local big sort of farming estate. And so we went on the tube, and I remember walking up Green Street from the tube station, and it was like a war zone. There were literally fights going on all over the place, and like a very innocent young kid from Saffron Walden, I'd never seen anything like this before. And it was quite exciting. And so Alan Kirbishley made his debut on that day. And we
really?
Yeah. I remember the headline on the back page of the Daily Express, which we always used to get every day, and it was the next Trevor Brooking. That was the headline, or something like that.
Yeah.
And we lost 1-0, and we stood on the corner of the West Stand and the North Bank. And I'll always remember that because it was really, I mean, the crowd would, you'd get carried along with the crowd. You couldn't sort of, it was all very tightly packed. I mean, you could never have that nowadays, obviously. And I just remember being so excited by it.
Yeah.
And I don't think my dad had been to, apart from going to that Wembley game, I don't think he'd been to a match for, well, since the 1940s, 1950s. So that's sort of how I came to support West Ham.
Did your dad end up supporting West Ham by proxy or not?
No. I mean, he would always watch any football that was on, but he was never really, I took him to West Ham 2014, 2015, I think it was. And we got a seat in seats in the director's box, somewhere you're very familiar with, obviously, Sean. And
never been there.
And I remember getting, because I'd built up a bit of a rapport with Jill. I don't know if you know Jill. She works for David Sullivan, does all the sort of match day stuff. And hey, I just...
You're talking to Sean at this point. Obviously, I don't know Jill.
And I just emailed. I said, look, my dad's, what would he have been then, 82 or something, and not particularly nimble on his legs. any chance? And she said, oh, absolutely. And I remember we met, I think we met Edna Valencia, Billy Bonds, and it was a great day. But my main memory of my dad and West Ham was when I took him to the playoff final in 2012 against Blackpool, which I know I'm going to tear up when I talk about this, because...
Don't take much, does it, Ian?
It really doesn't. No, you are absolutely right on that. But it was one... My mum was dying in hospital at the time, and I really wondered whether we should go. But there were, I think there were six of us that went. There's a friend of mine from the village who also supported West Ham, and another Blackpool supporter, a friend of my dad's. And we got... I thought, well, I'll hire a car to take us up there, because I thought, well, I have no idea where I would park. So my sister sorted it out, and this bloody Skoda arrives. And I was thinking, well, couldn't we do a bit better than that? So, and this guy had no clue where he was going. So he dropped us off in the car park. And I was thinking, I don't think Dad's going to be able to walk up that far. And then we encountered one of these Jobsworth security people who made us walk like about a quarter of a mile further than we actually needed to, because we could have just gone through a door if he'd let us. And then we had all the sort of pre-match meal, and it was like I became the parent and he became the child. And I can't remember what we had to eat, but my dad was always a fussy eater. He said, oh, I'm not eating that foreign muck. And I said, you'll bloody sit there until you've finished. And I just remember we were up... it was sort of kind of quite high up by one of the corner flags. And it was a great atmosphere. And I can't remember whether we were in the West Ham or Blackpool bits, to be honest. But we all just had the most fantastic time. And I've got some fantastic photos of it. And I remember when Blackpool scored, I took some pictures of my dad and his mate. And I mean, they were Blackpool fans, but they were just enjoying the day. It was just one of those great days.
Sam Allardyce's finest moment for West Ham.
Ricardo Vaste's finest moment, I think, or Carlton Cole's. And I mean, it wasn't a great match. Sean, honestly, is so unprofessional.
Terrible.
I know.
I mean, imagine if Hughie, I did that when I was on the air.
I know. This is just amateur hour. I do apologise for that. Leaving on my phone is just awful.
Ian, you've bypassed some significant moments in West Ham's history there, though. Was there anything else that you experienced? Not necessarily in the stadium, but...
Well, I didn't go much in the 1980s. Because I was at university in Norwich for, 1980 through to 85. And a year then in Germany. And then I moved to London and was working in Parliament, and I don't know why I didn't go then. I still there are all sorts of things in your youth that you think, well, why didn't I do that? When I lived in Germany, I had a car. Why didn't I travel more than I did? It's ridiculous. And I went a few times. I remember taking my old economics teacher from school, who was a Middlesbrough fan, and I took him sometime in the 1980s, but I can't really remember when. I didn't go to any of the Boys of 86 games. And it was only really towards the end of the 1980s that I started going, because I was working for the British Ports Federation, doing all their PR. And the guy that I used to do all the printing, he was a West Ham season ticket holder, John Parry. And
John.
you know him. And he effectively took me as corporate hospitality. And I would go to quite a few games. And then... I'm trying to remember any of the sort of... I can't really remember any of the games, if I'm honest. I mean, it wasn't a particularly brilliant time, that period. And then in 1991, I was living in Walthamstow, and I thought, well, it's only just down the road. Why don't I get a season ticket? Why I hadn't thought of that before, I do not know. So I got a season ticket and have had one ever since.
What year was that?
1991. It was just before we got promoted.
I think it was the promotion season.
What stand?
East stand, in the upper tier, about eight rows back. And we were there till the end of the decade, when they shifted us all over to the west stand, which I didn't want to go, because you know what it's like when you sit with the same people. You don't know them, but that no. you get to know them.
You do.
And there were some real characters around us. There was one guy we just referred to as Shouting Boy because he would just he would just shout the whole time.
Yeah.
And it was just a great place to watch the game from. And I really enjoyed it over there. And then we got moved to about, I think, five rows from the front of the West Stand, which I didn't like at all. And then we managed to go about 10 rows behind that. And that was where we stayed right through to the bitter end. And there was a group of five or six of us. I think at one stage there was a dozen of us that used to have season tickets, and we all knew each other. And I used to go with Jo Phillips, who was a producer at Five Live, and she, for some reason, had become a West Ham fan. I mean, she would admit that she was sort of a Johnny Come Lately football fan. But as the 90s wore on, you got quite a lot of people who got interested in football that weren't before. But all of that group has completely gone now. And that, to me, has taken a bit of the enjoyment out of it, because I quite liked... Well, there's a guy called Nicky Spindler who, one of his claims to fame was he wrote one of our Eurovision entries. And he and his son would sit in front of us. And then there was a guy that was chief executive of Monarch Airlines, who was a friend of John Parry's, who I'd play golf with him and John sometimes. He then moved to, I think, somewhere in East Kent, and then just didn't... I think kind of lost interest at one point, and he now lives in Spain. So all of these people that I used to go to football with in the 90s and sort of the early part of this century, they've all sort of gone now. And I do regret that. And I've got two season tickets, and I'd like to take somebody else, because, I mean, football, okay, you can go on your own and enjoy it, but it's not the same, is it? You want to have a shared experience?
Does John never go with you? Is he not a football person?
When John and I first met in 1995, I took him to, I think, about a dozen games. And at that point, I would sometimes sit in the upper Bobby Moore, right at the back. And yeah. I remember he'd either complain that it was cold or about all the swearing. And knowing him as I know him now, I'm astonished that he ever went to a single game, because the word football in our house is usually preceded by the word fucking or bloody. Mm. The other night, I was watching the Champions League final, 3 minutes to the end, and he says, "Your dinner's ready." And he sort of came in to sit down and have his dinner and wanted to watch Casualty. I said, "No, it's only 3 minutes to go." He said, "Yeah, I know what your 3 minutes are like." So he sort of goes off to the kitchen, and admittedly, there was about 10 minutes of injury time. But yeah, he's not into football.
What was the last West Ham game that you managed to get him to?
Oh, it would have been in 1995. Another friend of mine, American friend, Daniel Forrester, he came to live in London for 6 months. And he absolutely loved it. And he would do that sort of... come on, you Irons thing in an American accent, which never quite sounds right, does it? It always seems a bit false.
And, how about your podcast? Sorry, go on.
And my producer at LBC, Robbie, who's a Hull City fan, who told me about Jared Bowen months before we signed him. Whenever West Ham are playing, he keeps going, "You Irons!" And I said, "No, it's come on, you Irons!" They can never quite get it right.
How about your podcast wife, Jackie Smith? Has she been to a West Ham game?
No, she and I were going to go to the final game of last season, because that was going to be West Ham Villa, and I was going to take her there, but obviously that didn't happen because of the pandemic. She's a mad Aston Villa fan. She used to be a season ticket holder. Oh, yeah. No, she's really into her football. And her new man is a Manchester United supporter. I did sympathise with her. But no, she knows quite a lot about football, actually, and so she will come next season, I'm sure.
Good. So let's talk about, you founded West Ham Till I Die. What was that? Were you bored and got nothing to do? I can't remember what year it was founded.
I think it was 2007. The reason I did it was we played Fulham at home and lost 1-0 in the last minute. At least that's how I remember it. Somebody's now going to go back and check the stats. Nigel would know this if he were here, of course.
He won't be listening. Don't worry.
That's my memory. And I remember walking out of the ground. I just reached the exit, and there was this massive 6'5" guy ranting about Sullivan and Gold and making some really anti-Semitic remarks about them. And I was really tempted to give him some back, but as he was 6'5" and I'm 6'2", I thought possibly not a good idea. But I'm slightly ashamed of myself that I didn't, because I did when we were in the East Stand. There was a guy two rows in front who wasn't a season ticket holder. And I can't remember what the game was or who we were playing, but he started giving a black player, not one of ours, but one of the opposition black players, some really racist stick. And everyone sort of was looking nervously around them because it just was the type of stuff you wouldn't accept. And I thought, nobody's doing anything about this. So, of course, idiot that I am, because I was two seats above him, so I stood up, and I am quite tall. And I just said, "Oi!" And he turned round and I just said, "Shut it!" in my most aggressive non-camp way. And and to be fair, he did. And sort of everyone else was sort of silently mouthing to me, "Well done, mate." And that's the only two times that I've ever experienced anything like that at Upton Park.
I've never seen it at all.
No, but we have this reputation, don't we, as being the most, apart from Millwall, the most racist club in the country. And I genuinely don't think we are. But those were two occasions in what, nearly 30 years, or actually 30 years of going to West Ham games. So anyway, back to the story of the blog. So I remember I was really angry, not only about the fact that we'd lost in the last minute, but also this guy. And I remember driving home to Tunbridge Wells, and I was driving like an absolute lunatic. I was like literally banging the steering wheel because I was still so angry. And I thought, I've got to sound off about this. And I'd already been doing a political blog. So I just that evening started doing a West Ham blog. And I remember putting a message on the KUMB message board saying I started a blog. And then by midnight, I'd already got 1,000 views. I thought, well, that's quite good.
I'm surprised the moderators didn't delete your message. It was before.
Yeah, they didn't know me at that time. So off I went and I started doing two or three things a day. And I did it all myself at the beginning. And then it's been through various incarnations since then. But that's how it started.
You've always resisted advertising. I know you've just relaunched it. And you have said to me, privately or publicly, oh, I'm going to give it all up from point to point when something happens. What keeps you going on it? Because, you know, you're a busy man, aren't you? You do so many podcasts. You're on the TV. You're on the radio. On the outside, you don't have time to run a West Ham blog.
There was a point when I thought I can't do this anymore because my political blog, I was doing 5 or 6 posts a day on that, and I mean, that got serious numbers. I was getting, bear in mind, obviously, fewer people are interested in politics and sport. I was getting more readers every day than The Independent was. You might think that's not a very high bar. But that was taking a lot of time. And then when I started at LBC, because I used to do a lot of the blogging in the evening. And then when I got the evening show on LBC in 2010, something had to give. So I gave up the political blog. And I thought, I'm not going to give up West Ham till I die. But I stopped I stopped writing as much. And then I recruited a whole list of people to write for it as well. And that's how it runs now, really. It's funny, in the summer, I probably write more than I do during the season because obviously a lot of people like Nigel and a few of the others, they think, well, there's nothing to write about in the summer. So I tend to do more. And I would like to do more. When we relaunched it with the new design a few months ago, I did start writing a lot more and I wanted to keep it up. But, I mean, there are only so many hours in the day. And
I know that.
Well, quite. And I know, should I ever retire, which is I probably never will, but if I did, I quite look forward to doing a lot more football writing because I quite enjoy it.
Yeah. You were talking about your political blog. I'm trying to remember who was your opposite number. Is it Guido Fawkes? Is he still going?
Yeah, there was Guido Fawkes and Conservative Home. There was three of us that I suppose were the first movers in political blogging. When you're the first mover in anything, you have an inbuilt advantage. So that was kind of, though I had done political commentary on the media before that, that was what kind of made me reasonably well known because I'd get invited onto Sky News and all the other programs, Five Live, LBC, whatever, to do some punditry. And the blog was actually quite vital to that. And I used to break a lot of stories. I mean, Guido Forbes is obviously a very gossipy blog. Mine slightly, I mean, it was a bit, but less so. I didn't do a lot of the, well, I say I didn't do a lot of the scandal mongering. I mean, I was the one that broke the news about Charles Kennedy that he was going to quit. And John Prescott's affair with Tracy Temple, I got some inside knowledge on that. And so there was a bit of that, but it wasn't ever on the level of Guido Fawkes.
You didn't break the John Major and Edwina Curry.
No, but there was a story
quite
about
worked that.
That
one out at the
there
time.
Was a story about that. This was back in 2001, and I remember when I first heard about it, I was just gobsmacked. But and it was during the Conservative Party conference, and I used to run the bookshop at all the three party conferences. And at the Tory party conference, Anne Widdecombe was the star attraction. She'd written various novels, and they were actually very successful. And we used to sell hundreds of these. And she would literally come up to the stand at a preordained time, and she would be like an East End barrow boy, sort of shouting for people to come and sign the book. So anyway, unbeknown to her, when the Edwina Curry book arrived at the stand, I started piling them up beside her novels. She eventually cottoned on to what I was doing. And she would just shout out at people about her own novels, very clean novels, and then point to Edwina's book, very dirty diaries. And I sold 500 of Anne Widdecombe's book and 3 of Edwina Curry's. In fact, Edwina Curry is my next guest on the podcast that I interviewed Nigel for. So he's in good company.
John Major.
Yeah, she does.
Long time ago, I used to work for John Major when I worked for the Treasury. But that's another story.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, up, it was my upper boss. You know, I didn't report directly to him. But when I worked for the Treasury, he was a junior minister.
Well, I didn't know you had worked for the Treasury, Sean.
That I have lots of secrets. Talking about, used to traverse the halls of power as a lobbyist, I think, and etc. Do you come in contact with a lot of West Ham fans in Westminster?
I think West Ham is the most supported team. If you put all the political journalists together and all the MPs together, I think you'd get more West Ham fans than most other clubs. Particularly, I would say 10 or 15 years ago, virtually every political editor in the political lobby was a West Ham fan. Simon Walters on the Mail on Sunday. Well, you know Lee Clayton, obviously. And there were loads and loads of Peter Oborne, is another one I can think of. There were loads and loads of them. And MPs as well. You've got Tony McNulty was, Alex Shelbrook is. And there were quite a few others whose names don't immediately come to mind. But West Ham is well represented in Parliament.
And the lobbyists as well, are they sort of, or are they a bit more rugby people?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't really been in the world of political lobbying since the mid-90s.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
To be honest, so I can't really enlighten you on that one.
Let's talk about your publishing career, because not only did you, I think you had a political bookshop and publishers. I can't remember, Politico, was it?
Yeah, which I've actually revived as an online shop now.
Have so, you? But you don't own it anymore, do you?
I do, yeah.
Oh, you do?
I sort of bought it back. So, because I had a book out last year called Why Can't We All Just Get Along, all about the state of public discourse. And people kept asking me, where can I get a signed copy? And I thought, well, that's a good question. I don't know. So I just created a little one-page shop. And I got like literally hundreds of orders. And then I thought, well, I've got all of this stock from the old shop, mugs and greetings cards and political knickers and stuff with very tasteful slogans on the front, like things,
oh, can, I have only, seen this.
Things yeah. can only get wetter and a hand up, not a hand
oh,
out
dear.
For the many, not the few, things like that. And so I thought, well, I'll put them on as well. And they all started to sell. And this was easy, free money, really, because I'd already got them. I hadn't got to pay for them. And then it got to the point where I thought, well, this is all a bit amateurish. Let's get a proper shop design. So the guy that designed West Ham Till I Die, he's now designed politicos.co.uk. So
I've, Russell.
Russell. And so I, yeah. and believe it or not, as if I hadn't got anything else to do, I fulfill all the orders myself.
No.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
So I get home from LBC at like 11:30 at night, and then I start packing up books and mugs and knickers.
I think that's good.
It's quite therapeutic, actually. But people yeah. like it. They've ordered a book that, I mean, if it's one of my books, obviously they want them signed. So, and there's a thing where you can say you can have a personalised message. And I yeah. think people like that. I mean, before, if I tell
I like
you,
that.
That book I sold 1,500 copies of in hardback, and the Prime Minister's book that came out in November, I've done about 1,300 of those. Now, I mean, that's a £25 hardback, which yeah. you wouldn't normally expect to sell that quantity. So, I'll probably earn more from doing that than I will from the royalties on the books.
Not more than LBC, though.
No, that is very true. That is the best paid job I've ever had and ever
is
likely
it?
To have. Yeah.
Oh, good luck.
You've published a number of West Ham books. I don't know yep. how many. I'm sure you can tell us. Is that a vanity project? Do you make any money out of publishing
well,
West Ham books?
It's very rare that I would ever take on a book that I didn't think would sell enough just to wash its face. I mean, when you're in political publishing, which is predominantly what I was, you know that you're not going to sell 10,000 copies of a book. It's, or you hope you might. But we had structured our company. So if we sold a couple of thousand, it would either break even or make a bit of a profit. So and obviously being a West Ham supporter, I was quite interested in what former West Ham players would do. Or people involved in the club. So I did Jeremy Nicholas's book, which I thought was a fantastic book, and that sold really well. This was right in the early days, 2010, 2011, I think. It was after he'd got fired. I was talking to Carlton Cole about doing his autobiography, and I was going to ghost his autobiography, but that never came to anything. Who else? I did do a book which I didn't publish, but Haynes Publishing did, West Ham When Football Was Football. And it was kind of a coffee table book. Lots of pictures from the Mirror archives, and it's only about 25,000 words. That was I loved doing that. And then that did quite well. And they said, do you want to do another one? And I thought, well, it's a bit different doing it about a club that you're not affiliated to. But I thought, okay, well, I'll do Norwich City because they're my second team for obvious reasons. So I did that one as well. And actually, I enjoyed doing that slightly more in a way because I really had to do the research on that far more than I did for West Ham.
I was going to get into that, yeah.
Believe it or not, they then stopped the series around that time because I was then going to do Ipswich Town, which probably wouldn't have gone down well with the Norwich fans, but there we are.
I think I met you after you were doing a book signing outside Newham Bookshop on that one, and I met you for the first time, even though I started blogging for you in, I don't know, 2013 or something.
I think you should come back and go respectable again.
Yeah, I know you do say that. I did say to you because my name's still on the on your website, and I do come in and upset the natives every now and then. I did say I would try to write for you at least once a month, didn't I? That was at the beginning of the year, which you haven't done. Well, I've probably written two.
Well, if you fancy doing anything over the summer, you'd be very welcome to.
Yeah, since Nigel is on his sabbatical.
Yeah,
I will
quite.
Do. I'll do that. Right. Len, next question.
Next question. Well, it's actually to you, Sean.
Oh, go on.
Ian mentioned, you know, writing for another club, and now he found it exciting. Would you consider doing that? Because a lot of the fans wish that you would. And I just wondered if
you know what? Let me tell you a story. Right?
Is it a funny one though, Sean? That's what we want to know.
So, after our success, Hugh
you
and
had
I's.
Success?
Well, you know, from advertising in Claren Hugh, we had this idea that we could redo the same for a number of other clubs, well-supported clubs. So we thought we could do it for Arsenal. We thought we could do it for Spurs, Man United, Chelsea. And we created some Twitter accounts. And we started to recruit some journalists. And we were hiring sort of ex, you know, tabloid people that had fallen on hard luck and weren't working anymore and sort of gave them each a club. But do you know what? It didn't work. You know, what we've got at West Ham is very unique.
Yeah.
The access we've got is very unique. You know, and I would find it, if I'm honest, I tried to look at it, you know, I would find it really difficult writing, even if it's for money, you know, and it was well paid for the advertising. I find it difficult writing about Arsenal or Spurs or Chelsea. And funny enough, Sam Inkersoll, who some of you may know, who writes for Football London, left West Ham to write for Chelsea. And he contacted me recently, said it's a lot harder to get information out of Chelsea. You know,
oh, there you go.
Their ball don't talk. You know, there's not a lot of leaks from the club. So, you know,
why did he do that?
Sorry?
Why did he do that?
I thought he thought the grass was greener on the other side, Ian.
Well, that'll learn him.
And in came Tom Clark, who's now, who I get on very well, who's now the Football London guy. And, you know, he's now the person in the press box. But I don't know. I think the time of journalists leading stories and this whole pre-match press conference is very old hat now. Most people read information not from papers but from social media now. And I think it's here to stay. But to answer your question, no. I don't think I would have the same passion or the same
It's a bit like there are rumours that I've heard that Dominic Cummings might go and work for Keir Starmer. And you think, well, how can that possibly be? And it's exactly the same kind of thing. Because in the end, we are part of a tribe. And
yes,
yeah.
The thing is that people who aren't part of a tribe never quite understand. And even though, I mean, I'm not a member of the Tory party anymore, haven't been for 11 years now, I will still always be sort of slightly attached to that tribe, or people will always think I am, even if I'm not. I still criticise them a lot. But, I mean, if it comes to it, I would always vote for them rather than vote for the other lot. And just as I would always support West Ham, I couldn't. I mean, I often wonder if West Ham went out of business, which, let's face it, we weren't that far away from doing 10 years ago or so.
Before the owners saved us, you mean?
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
No, seriously, they did, though. You can't argue with that, Len. That is a fact. We were not that far from going out of business.
Yeah, but that's, I mean, they weren't the only ones that could have done that. But
well, maybe, yeah, but they were there and they did do it. I often think, could I ever support, and if West Ham weren't there, could I support another team like I have supported West Ham? And I came to the conclusion that I would probably then go to a lower league team like Gillingham.
Yeah.
Because I used to go to Gillingham a lot in the 80s.
Would. And do you know what, Ian and Sean? I think a lot of these, I often wonder, a lot of these GSB outers, that suddenly I don't seem as much GSB out as I thought I was, first of all. I wonder how much of them, if they honestly had a quiet word with themselves, do they really have an issue with modern football, and would they be happier not supporting another team? I wouldn't be that cruel, but would they be happier? Would a lot of people be happier supporting grassroots, not just the GSB outers? I don't mean that really, but a lot of people. I wondered if they, as a footballing experience, I wonder if they wonder.
Well,
I wonder if they prefer to do grassroots.
That is a really interesting question. My MP in Tunbridge Wells, Greg Clark, who was a cabinet minister, he's a Middlesbrough fan. He comes from up there. And he's got a 10-year-old, well, at that point, he got a 10-year-old son, and he wanted his son to experience football.
Yeah.
And they came to West Ham a couple of times, and then they went to Crystal Palace a couple of times. And then lo and behold, he'd got them both a Crystal Palace season ticket.
Yeah.
And I said, well, what'd you do that for? Well, much more interesting supporting West Ham than Crystal Palace. He said, well, it's just like an old ground, and I just wanted him to see what it's like in a ground like that. Anyway, he then said to me, do you want to come and see West Ham Crystal Palace? I don't know when this was, a couple of years ago now. So we went along to Selhurst Park, got the train from Tunbridge Wells, went all through various weird stations. And we went into the ground, and I thought, I'm sure this is where the ultras sit. And lo and behold, and I sat down, and I was thinking, this is definitely where they sit. And I was thinking, oh my God, if they see me, because, I mean, bear in mind, South London is like my manor in terms of LBC.
Yeah.
And this guy walked up to me. He goes, don't worry, mate, I'll look after you. I was thinking, Jesus Christ. Anyway, we go two up. I'm sitting on my hands because I do have a... So if I'm at an away game and we score, I do have a tendency to disgrace myself. And so we go 2-0 up, and I'm thinking, this is just fantastic. And they were getting really knocked off, the Palace fans. And they started doing these really obscene chants. Well, I say really obscene. They were sort of quite aggressive chants. And there we have the Secretary of State for Business and Energy and whatever else it is, standing up with his 10-year-old son, going on shouting out all of these chants. And I thought, your colleagues around the cabinet table would never believe this. And I really wanted to video it to prove that it had happened. But it was quite something.
Good luck to him. Exactly. I sometimes watch the Tanners. I've got a place in Leatherhead. So I think I said on the podcast recently, Jimmy Bullard was... the manager there, and his son Archie.
He's gone completely grey, hasn't he?
Yeah, his son Archie. He lives just down the road from us here in Surrey when he moved to Leatherhead, and his son goes to my son's school. They're good friends. So.
I should have said the point of that story was not to talk about Crystal Palace. It was just before lockdown, Greg said, he said, you know, I go and watch Tunbridge Wells play now, and it's really good. And I said,
two men
and a dog are there. He said, no.
Yeah.
There's several hundred people, and it's a really good atmosphere. So when we're out of all of this, I said I'd go with him.
I wonder if your personal match day experience should necessarily be your major team now. Maybe a lot of people would enjoy it, especially after the breakdown. They've been watching more TV football.
Well, I said a moment ago, my best friend in the 80s at UEA came from Mepham, and we used to go to Gillingham. He was a mad Gillingham supporter, still is. And I must have been to, I don't know, about 20 matches at Gillingham somewhere in the sort of early to mid 80s. I saw Steve Bruce break his leg just about 6 feet away from me, and the crack, it resonated round the stadium, and the whole place just went quiet. And they had some fantastic players at that point. And I just remember the atmosphere was so different to anything that I'd ever seen before. And Ron Hilliard in goal, Tony Cascarino, Mickey Adams, who else? Can't remember. But there were loads of players.
What about Townsend? Was he there?
Not, I don't think he was there at that point. Might have been, but I don't remember him. I remember Mickey Adams. And bizarrely, I went on to publish his autobiography.
There you go.
He was a brilliant player, I thought.
Now, bringing it back to West Ham, I don't know if you heard, but Mark Noble has said when he retires next year, he's going to go back to grassroots football. He said that a few of his mates still play on Sunday, and he's going to
Well,
carry
Joe
on
Cole
playing.
Does, doesn't he? He has a Sunday league team, yeah.
Joe Cole disappointed me at the Champions League, Ian.
He disappointed a lot of people.
What did he do?
Well, he's pretended to be a West Ham fan and that he cares about the club, but he showed his true colours. I mean, I don't know if you saw the video he jumped up and celebrated. And he said he talked about his two sons have been brought up Chelsea fans. They really love Chelsea. And then he talked about something like he was chairman of supporters club or whatever. And I know he's a youth coach there. But the way he jumped up, I don't mind if he is a Chelsea fan, but don't try and pretend something else. Don't try and well, you know, be Billy Two Ways and try and have it that he can.
What basis of comparison have they got, though, really?
Yeah, but is if he's a Chelsea fan, just say he's a Chelsea fan. No, don't try and pretend to be a West Ham fan.
No, I don't agree with you. I don't know if you listen to his podcast that he does with Tom Davis.
I don't know.
Well, I reckon, apart from this one, that is the best football podcast out there. I listen to it every week. And they, you honestly, try it out. Because when I first started listening to it, I thought, Joe is somebody who... he tries to speak so fast that sometimes he can't quite get his words out, but he has developed so, I think, as into a first class pundit. And he gets all of his mates on as guests, like one per episode, like David Jones. I mean, they're mostly ex West Ham or Chelsea or Liverpool players. And the things that he gets out of them, I mean, he's a brilliant interviewer because they don't realise they're spilling the beans. Whereas in all of these normal football interviews, they just are so vanilla, you don't hear anything interesting. Believe me on this, you want to give it a try. Listen to the one with Trevor Sinclair or David James or who's that? Oh, what's his name? Played for Aston Villa and Everton, England player, Gareth Barry. All of them, Jens Lehmann, I mean, every single one, it's the most brilliant listen. And Joe talks a lot about, most of the podcasts are actually about his own career as well. So, because Tom Davis obviously wants to quiz him too. And he is an absolute West Ham fan. But Yes, absolutely. If you've played for a club, he slags off Liverpool a lot because he had a really bad time there. But he had a really good time at Chelsea.
He didn't have a great time with Chelsea, Ian, to be fair.
He did. He won lots of things with Chelsea.
Yeah, but he wasn't. I don't recall him being that happy.
Well, he comes across.
I don't know that for sure.
Remembering his time at Chelsea very fondly. So I don't think it's a surprise at all that he would jump out of his chair when Chelsea scored in the Champions League at all. Well, what's he going to do? I mean, he's obviously going to support them rather than Manchester City.
Yeah, now, yeah. I get that. I suppose it was the talk of being the chairman and he's bringing his sons up to be Chelsea fans rather than
he's talked about that as well, and he said he didn't actually, one of them isn't a Chelsea fan, one is, but he said, I think he did say that he wanted them to be West Ham, but for whatever reason.
Oh, really?
Reason,
all right. I might have to take a bit of it back then.
Yeah, it's strange, Sean. Let me just give you a glimpse of how time passes, because I was actually taking a note of when Joe Cole played for us from now is the same time as the boys of 86 to us winning the European Cup Winners' Cup. Now, that's a long... If you look at the length of time between since Joe's played for us, 1-0, didn't play... played for 3 seasons,
four,
max,
four,
wasn't it?
I think.
Yeah.
All right,
but when he talks about his time at West Ham, you can tell the affection in his voice, the enthusiasm.
He is
completely, and I think I'm right in saying that he grew up in Kentish Town, and I think he was an Arsenal fan.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's had an interesting time in a way, but the stories that he has from his career, whether it's in America, whether it's Aston Villa, Coventry. It is just fascinating. You would love that podcast, Sean. I can absolutely assure you.
I will give it a listen. When I finish, I'm a bit behind on Price of Football with Kieran Maguire.
Oh, you see, I can't get into that. I've tried.
Really?
I have tried to listen
to that.
It
gives me so many stories.
The other one, which you might want to... I don't know why I'm advertising lots of other podcasts, but quickly, Kevin,
that's all right.
Do you listen to that?
No.
It's all about football in the 90s, and it's Chris Skull, formerly of the Come podcast.
Oh, I know Chris, yeah.
And what's his name? Josh Widdicombe and some other guy that I don't know. And they do about sort of 20 minutes of banter at the beginning. Then they have a guest on. And again, they're all footballers or managers from the 90s. They had Harry Redknapp on the other day, and I thought I'd heard all of Harry Redknapp's stories before, but that was really good. They had Ian Dowie, they had him on. But that's a good listen.
Good. Well, today we've only got an hour, so we're sort of running out of time because moving to the new software, our first trial only lasts an hour, so that's a really good reason to keep it under an hour, which is why there's no questions and why I can get
I was looking forward to questions.
Ian, what's for
Facebook,
dinner tonight,
Twitter
Ian?
Question. What's sausage plait.
Sausage what?
Plait.
Oh, you mean like a Cumberland ring, that kind of thing?
I think it's all, yeah, it's all in pastry.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Not toad in the hole.
Decent.
Not toad in the hole. I do like a toad in the hole, it has to be said.
I'm sure you do. Favourite past West Ham player, Ian?
Paolo Di Canio.
Oh.
Current West Ham player.
That's a really difficult one. I will say Jared Bowen.
Oh.
Because I think he, of all of our players last season, I think he's the most underrated. He has a tremendous work rate. He knows where the goal is. And I just love his attitude. But I mean, frankly, and I think you'll probably both agree with me, there wasn't a weak link last season, was there? I
mean, and they've all got good attitudes.
Yeah, and when Craig Dawson came into the side, I thought, oh my God, are we really reduced to this? Then, of course, he was brilliant, although he tailed off a bit at the end, it has to be said. But virtually every player performed, even those that, I mean, like Lanzini, who was always one of my favourite players. I mean, when he came on towards the end of the season, you thought, oh, he's going to do something. And I hope we keep him because I think he's still got the potential to really do well. But certainly as a squad player, and particularly as we're in Europe, but I suspect he might be off.
Last time you went to the watch West Ham in person?
March the 8th, 2017. Or did I go to that one? No, not 2017. What am I talking about? 2020.
I thought the last match was the 29th of February. Well, that was my last one before.
I did go to that one. It was the one
that's against Southampton.
Yeah, I did go to that, and then there was another one which I didn't go to after that because I could see what was coming.
There was the Manchester United one for 2000. Now, Ian, I am going to pull you to task on something. You were offered a ticket. In the second ballot of returns.
Yeah.
Why didn't you go?
Well, I'd already arranged to go to Norfolk that weekend, and I thought, well, I haven't been to any matches this season. I'm not going to miss one more. And I felt that it would be really weird with only 10,000 people there.
Yeah.
As it turned out, I didn't go to Norfolk because LBC wanted me to cover a show on the Saturday morning. So I could have gone, and I slightly kicked myself in a way.
Yeah.
But if I had gone, maybe we wouldn't have won, so...
Yeah, no, it was good. It was good. Last question. How much of each day do you either think or do something about West Ham? Or your waking day?
Quite a lot, because I do look at all the different websites every day.
You do?
Well, yeah. Claret and Hugh, because I get their alerts coming up on my screen, mainly because I can't work out how to stop them coming up.
So, you get a new phone or something.
I mean, I'm sorry, but the adverts on that site here, I know I've said this to you many times, Sean, are so off-putting. I don't mind advertising, but not when they keep sort of coming up and then you can't see what's behind them.
No.
And it is really off-putting. So I don't look at Claret and Hugh as much as I used to. And I don't listen to the other podcasts. I occasionally might listen to Stop Hammer Time, but I haven't listened to any of the others.
Where do you get your West Ham news from then?
Well, I usually look at News Now and then click on the different things from there. But I've blocked a lot of the site. I cannot stand it when all these different West Ham sites, they put very misleading headlines, sort of West Ham fans so excited about this new midfielder. It's just clickbait. And you do that as well quite a lot, much more than
you
used to.
Yeah, he does do that.
And I just think, well, so any site that does that too much now, I just block on News Now. So I'm only down to about 8 or 9.
I mean, there are rules for News Now. You have to tread the line quite carefully, as you will know yourself, Ian.
Do I?
Have you had to get a warning from News Now or not? I probably never.
No.
Sounds like you have, Sean. One or two.
Anyway, we've had a right butcher's hook, not a proper gallon.
Yeah, butcher's hook.
So if you're interested, if you're interested, if you're one of the eight listeners and you want us to quiz you as we've quizzed Ian over the summer, if there's no transfer news or there's no other news, you know, we will talk about the Euros, etc. Why don't you drop us a line? Sorry there was no questions. But
we might change that next time.
Len and myself will be around for the summer. Whatever happens, Len and myself will be around. But we're going to encourage some guest support presenters in. Ian, when he's available, will pop in from time to time. But we're about running out of time. Anything you want to say, Ian, before we sign off for the week?
No, much enjoyed it. I didn't realise I was going to get a grilling, but I thought we'd be talking about transfer targets and whatever.
Yeah,
but,
well, I didn't prepare anything, so we sort of had a little on-air
no, I mean, look, I love what you do on this podcast, because and I genuinely listen to every single episode, because I now drive into London every day rather than go on the train.
Oh, do you?
For obvious reasons. Well, because I'm type 2 diabetic, so I still think it's better not to. And I've got like an hour and a quarter each way, so that fills up at least 1.5 days of my driving.
Yeah, not this week, but you won't need to listen.
Not this week, no. But I just think it's a really good thing to do, and I think people like effectively eavesdropping on a conversation down the pub, and that's what it's all about.
That's what we always designed it to be in, as you know. That's what it's a chat of West Ham people down the pub. Len, without using your real name again at the beginning. You got anything to say to our listeners?
Well, we haven't.
I've enjoyed it today.
We haven't had a Brady out from Len, which
Brady out.
that's Ian's.
We haven't,
Brady.
Have we?
No,
it was quite nice not to talk
see
about
what,
the
see what my
out.
Influence is, Len. I never knew I had so much.
Anyway, I've been Sean. Ian's been
gagging for his dinner.
Len's been
A little bit sunburned, I think.
Yeah, you
are a bit.
Yeah, I didn't realise.
Shot. Yeah.
I mean, it's getting darker, but my face is staying the same colour.
Yeah. Anyway, come on, you Irons.
Come on, you Irons. More than just a podcast. Bobby Moore. More than just a podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.